Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
If I didn't know any better, I'm guessing Sean still has his mute button on. Yep. Hey, buddy.
There it is. Yep, you're right. Hey, Jonesy, I know that we, I'm just telling Jonesy this right now. I know that we were trying to get into the habit of hitting our mute buttons heading into breaks. I'm going to stop doing that because that's twice now that I've hit the mute button going into a break. And I don't know that we need to because our mics are controlled back at the back with our producer, Chris Jones. So that extra layer of care that we were taking of making sure that we were muted has actually resulted in what I would imagine is, Seth, is about 10 seconds worth of stress twice now that you didn't need in your life.
Yeah.
Me not
no,
being
that's
there.
Right. I just enjoy the music. I just enjoy it. I don't know. Who's that? Stevie Nicks? Whatever.
It is. It's a catchy little tune. We found out that the Texans, Seth, were in on Derek Wolfe, who was a very productive player for the Denver Broncos for several years, did a nice job of getting after the passer as a guy who that played a position that the Texans could use right now. He wound up going to the Baltimore Ravens on a one-year, $3 million deal with a chance to make another $3 million in incentives. And I think you look at a guy like Derek Wolfe and at the stage he's at in his career, he's probably looking at two things, I would imagine. One, do I have a chance to win a Super Bowl? And two, do I have a chance to play on a defense where I can really be productive? I don't know what the how guys like Derek Wolfe view the Texans as a place to win a Super Bowl right now. We know that Randall Cobb said in his conference call that that was a big deal for him, that they've made the playoffs the last few years, but the Texans are a team that's forecasted to win 8 games by Vegas right now. The Ravens are forecasted to win 11 and a half games by Vegas right now. It's the other part that made me think with Derek Wolfe, Seth, is that he would have been playing on a defensive line that includes J.J. Watt. And if this were 5 years ago, does a guy like Wolf come to the Texans in large part to play next to J.J. Watt? And does his not coming here give any sort of indication as to how Wolf and maybe some other people feel about where J.J. Watt is on his career curve?
Well, I mean, I guess I would say first and foremost, I'm guessing he probably went to the place that offered him the most money. You know, maybe not. It's not like it was huge money, and he's made a really good chunk of money, so that's not the only decision he had to make. But in most cases, people go where the money is biggest. But let's say that hypothetically it was the same amount of money. I wouldn't fault him for going to the Ravens. Look, they had a better defense last year. Their style of defense probably is more likely to give a guy like Derek Wolfe more sack production because they blitz a lot. So I think that he probably looked at the Ravens and thought, all right, look, I might be aging. I might be getting up there. I might not be playing as much, but I'm going to have more opportunities to get sacks and maybe extend my career and not take as much of a physical toll. And it's just the Texans, meanwhile, they don't have an allure as a defense right now because they weren't a good defense last year. And that's where I get a little bit nervous. Not that I'm being pessimistic, like the Texans, as concerned as I am about some things with the Texans this year, they still have Deshaun Watson. They still have a few really good things going for him. But I think that I worry that Bill O'Brien doesn't necessarily realize that defense matters. And I get it. He does. He's had good defenses. You know what it is? I don't worry that Bill O'Brien knows that defenses matter. I worry that general manager Bill O'Brien doesn't know how to sustain and keep a good defense. That's what I worry about.
If you had to bet, do they use the 40th overall pick on an offensive player or a defensive player?
I think it's going to be a defensive player. Just given the fact that they haven't gone aggressively after any kind of replacement for DJ Reader, you know what I've wanted for the last 12 months? I want more of an interior pass rush presence. I want somebody that can get after the passer from the inside. Other than J.J. Watt, and because most of the time J.J. rushes from the outside anyway, you know, D.J. Reader was good at rushing the passer for a big guy, but he's not the guy you ideally want out there on second and long and third and long. And he's not necessarily the guy that he's more of a run stuffer than a pass rusher. So I think that they end up taking a defensive lineman with either the first or the pick and second pick in the second round.
As you touched on, Derek Wolfe would not have been a big ticket signing in terms of money, but he's an accomplished player who has got a very specific skill set. Is there anything that we can learn from them being in the hunt for Derek Wolfe as far as maybe some of the things Anthony Weaver might want to do or change defensively with the team?
That's a good point. You know what? Yeah, and it's a good point. I wonder, because they did apparently talk to him, I don't know what the offer was or how aggressive it was, but they are mindful of that. Yeah, I think Derek Wolfe is, if you look at DJ Reader is that classic body type guy that, like, he's a run stuffer, and this year he became more of a pass rusher. He added on to it. Derek Wolfe is like a 285, 290 pound guy. He's more like J.J. Watt than he is D.J. Yep. Reader by a long shot. I don't mean he's as good as J.J. Watt, obviously, but he's more of that versatile 3-4 defensive end type. He could play 3 technique and a 4-3. He can do all those things for you. So I think, again, that's why I feel like since they missed out on Derek Wolfe, they're going to go after another body type guy like that. I was a little surprised when Todd McShay in his 2-round draft mock took Justin Madubuike. I always mess his name up, but the Aggie defensive lineman A&M, there. Yeah. And he's like a 290 pound guy. I don't think he's much heavier than 290. And he's almost like, he almost looks like an Antonio Smith 290, you know, where Antonio Smith was not a big dude. I'm skeptical of him playing in a 3-4, but he might grow into that, and they might bring him in. If they drafted a guy like him, they'd be able to bring him in on passing downs. And he'd be a guy that in today's NFL, the hard thing to do is to be out there in your nickel package where you have 5 defensive backs, but also be able to stop the run. Like, you want to have pass rushers out there, but you still got to be able to stop the run. So a lot of times teams will start putting all these, especially 3-4s, they'll put all these outside linebackers out there. All of a sudden you got Whitney Merciless playing over a guard. You got other linebackers out playing interior defensive line positions. Teams can gash you in the run when that's what you have to resort to get a pass rush. I think they'd like to have a little bit more of a conventional pass rush. And a guy like Madubuike, you know, Shelby Harris from the Broncos was a guy that I was hoping might provide a little of that, but he re-signed with the Broncos. And I think now there's probably not a lot of guys out there that the Texans would prefer over just drafting a guy in the second round.
Yeah. They certainly have more needs on defense than they do offense. So I think that may be why defense is a good play there as to what they may use that first pick that they got, the 40th overall pick that they got in the DeAndre Hopkins trade. I wonder if Derek Wolfe would have taken umbrage with J.J. Watt's selection for which snack cake has the best starting 5. Did you see this, Seth? I feel like you're uniquely qualified to comment on this.
This was honestly a shock to me. He says Little Debbie has the best starting 5. And then he lists zebra cakes, Nutty Buddy, oatmeal cream pie, honey buns, and cosmic brownies. I got to tell you, the only thing on that list that's not complete trash is the Nutty Buddy. Oatmeal cream pie. I don't think I've never lowered myself to even consider eating an oatmeal cream pie.
Yeah. Just to be clear, the debate between zebra cakes and oatmeal cream pie nearly ended my friendship with Ted Johnson. He is staunchly team oatmeal cream pie. Now, you think zebra cakes are trash too? You only like the Nutty Buddy on that list?
I only like the Nutty Buddy and not all that much. I mean, if I'm going to go for my strongest starting 5, how can you go anywhere other than Hostess? I mean, you've got Ho-Hos, you've got Ding Dongs.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You've got Zingers. Fruit pie. Am I even up to 5 yet? I might not have room to fit all these.
You didn't even
five.
Mention. Oh, and of you course, didn't even mention Twinkies.
The Twinkie. I would have started off with the Twinkie.
Yeah,
I got
Twinkie,
caught up.
Twinkies,
I was looking at
it. It's the J.J. Watt of snack cakes in the Hostess family. It's their That's their pillar.
Between Twinkies and Ho-Hos, honestly, I feel like you could list Twinkies and Ho-Hos, then Twinkies and Ho-Hos again for your top four, and it would still dust any of that Little Debbie crap that JJ's talking about.
Well, a ding-dong is really just a Ho-Ho structured differently. You know what I mean? It's a ding-dong is it's the same ingredients. It's just that Ho-Hos are in a swirly cylindrical form, and a ding-dong is shaped like a miniature hockey puck. But they're the okay. same thing. They're devil's food cake with chocolate frosting and the delicious cream filling that's made out of confectionery sugar and vegetable shortening.
You know what? I wish I'd one of my regrets in life, you know, they always say that when you're on your deathbed, nobody ever says they wish they'd spent more time in the office. I feel like on my deathbed, I'm both going to say that I wish I had spent more time in the office eating snowballs. Because I have never eaten a whole bunch of snowballs, and I can fix that. I mean, I can write that wrong and eat a whole bunch of snowballs before I die sooner than I otherwise would have, of course, because I'll be eating snowballs. I'm looking at these snowballs right now, and how the hell did I never get into those? Those look incredible.
Well, they look good. Here's the thing. When the snowballs that I always saw in the store were pink. They weren't white like this. Like, these look like actual snowballs. They're the one in the picture that you and I are both looking at here, the link that you have here. It's a white snowball. I think they're covered in coconut, though, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, though. It's like the cream filling, but it's like they have the cream filling, but then they also have a cream topping, and then that's covered with coconut.
Yeah, I'm out on coconut, man. I can't do coconut.
I'll be honest with you. The fruit pies, I used to eat a lot of these fruit pies when I was a kid, but when I look at them now in the store, it's hard to stomach the idea of eating a fruit pie from a...
How come? Like
I don't know. There's something about there's the actual fruit concoction just being in there at room temperature for so long. It just feels like it's unnatural. I don't know. As opposed to the stunning, pristine natural condition of a Twinkie.
Yeah. A couple of things here, Seth, because this is an important topic. We are going through the Hostess family of cakes to squash J.J. Watt's contention that Little Debbie has the best starting lineup. I feel like the honey bun shouldn't count for anybody. Like the honey bun, a honey bun's a honey bun. It's not something that's indigenous via its look or its shape or its taste to any of the families of various food cakes. J.J. has it in his damn top five. If one of your top five things is a honey bun, I feel like you're a team that's very – I feel like JJ's lineup is very top-heavy. To me, his lineup is zebra cakes and that's it, whereas Hostess, you can fill out a delicious starting five.
This is the problem with the honey bun, listing it for that. Like all the other – these types of both Little Debbie and Hostess-type treats are things that aren't – like they're their own types of dessert. You don't find them in a bakery or something. When you eat a honey bun, you're just taking something that you would find at the grocery store or the bakery that you can get fresh – and eating a worse version of it. I don't understand why anybody would decide to willingly eat a honey bun when you can probably go get one from the bread section for even less, and it was baked that morning.
Freshly
stupid.
Baked.
It's stupid is what it is. And frankly, I distrust, I'm a little bit nervous about JJ for this year, this coming
My up. Other thing, that's a valid sports take by you right there. My other thing, God, I forgot how good donuts are too. The little miniature donuts.
That's different though. I give those a pass, even though you can find donuts elsewhere. You can't find them quite as neat and pristine as you do in a prepackaged donut.
Yeah, or bite size like these. These are just, you just eat them like Tic Tacs. They're, at least I do. The other thing that's missing here, and I think it was a Hostess product. Do you remember the Chocodile?
No, I don't think I ever
Chocodile,
saw one.
The Chocodile was basically a Twinkie with the chocolate frosting of a Ho-Ho or a Ring-Ding on it.
A Chocodile Twinkie. The confection was known as Chocodiles prior to 2014. It's a snack cake. It's a chocolate coated sponge cake with creamy filling. Oh, so it's got like a hard coating to it.
Yeah.
Like a hard chocolate coating to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing, I've done a little bit of research. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff with Twinkies these days. They've got gluten free Twinkies. They've got all kinds of crazy stuff.
Oh, well, getting a little kinky with these Twinkies. I like it. Nice. Seth, they put out spreads on all 16 games, Vegas did. It's actually sportsbetting.ag did this. They put out spreads in an effort to try to get people betting on things. It's kind of amazing to watch the sports betting world where there's no action coming in right now, obviously on the NCAA tournament, the NBA, NHL, MLB, these would all be things that sports books, both online and in person, brick and mortar, would be taking action on, but none of that exists right now. Sports are canceled right now, so they're having to find other ways to generate activity, including people betting on simulated Madden games. We saw the betting on people betting on the NASCAR simulator. It's crazy. So they've put spreads out on all of the NFL games this year with the idea, obviously, we don't know what the schedule is going to look like from when these games are going to be played. There's still a draft to be done. There's still free agency. Guys are going to get injured, blah, blah, blah. But all 16 Texan games have a spread right now if you wanted to bet on them. And this is, who knows, maybe people find some inefficiencies in the marketplace. But these spreads are a little terrifying to me, Seth, because Vegas usually knows what they're talking about. I don't know if you've had a chance to see these, but the Texans are favored in just 6 games this coming season out of the 16.
They're also pick'ems in 2 of them. So yep. It's not like they're picked to lose in 10 games. They're just they're only picked to win in 6 games. So that doesn't completely and totally shock me. I think that still puts them at about a 500 team, right? That's how Vegas sees them right now, as a 500 team. And if there's anything that Bill O'Brien has done over the last several seasons, it's that he's shown that they squeeze out a lot of close one-score games and end up with a better than 800 record, even though like all the other stats and metrics show that they should be an 8-8 football team. They somehow keep, like as Ted Johnson would say, their toast always lands jelly side up. And they end up winning a few of these close games, and they end up with like a 10-6 record.
Yeah, they do. I guess just to add a little more nuance to it here, they're favored in just 6 games, and 4 of those are by either 1 or 1.5 points. So you're a slight tick in the marketplace away, Seth, from only being favored in 2 games. You know what I mean? Like, now you're a couple ticks away, as you point out. They're pick'ems in 2 of them. You're a couple ticks away from being favored in half of your games on the season. I guess my point is that when the Texans are playing in games that they're favored in, they're largely coin flip games. When they're playing in games in which they are underdogs, you're looking at games like being underdogs of more than a field goal to teams like the Bears, the Browns, the Steelers. They're underdogs by 4.5. These are obviously all road games, but still, they're underdogs to the Colts by 4.5, the Titans by 4.5. And Seth, if you want to get in early on the Chiefs game, the Texans are 10.5 point underdogs to the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, I was going to say the 2 games that hurt the most here when I look at this and I think about last year's regular season is that the Texans are only favored to beat the Patriots by 1.5 points, and they're favored to lose, or the Chiefs are favored by 10.5 points. The Texans beat both those teams in the regular season last year, but looking back on it and looking at it objectively, you look at the Chiefs game and Pat Mahomes was not himself. That was when he lost to AFC South teams, 3 games in a row. It was like the AFC South had his number in the regular season, but he was banged up, and the Texans played him even before he had his kneecap injury, but Mahomes was already banged up. Bernardrick McKinney kind of put a limping on him early in that game. So you look back and you think, okay, were the Texans actually evenly matched against the Chiefs? Or was it more just that Mahomes wasn't himself? And then you look at the Patriots game, and half the Patriots team had the flu. They certainly looked like it. But now I'm a little bit insulted that the Texans at home are only favored by 1.5 points when the Patriots don't even know who their quarterback's going to be. That's where I started. I'm a little bit angry about that. And I guess it could only be that people think that Patriots defense is still going to be really good despite losing a couple people, and they trust that Patriots defense more than DeAndre Hopkins Deshaun Watson without DeAndre Hopkins.
Seth, if we believe that home field advantage is worth 3 points either way, and that's what the betting community largely feels like, is that if you have home field, you adjust the spread by 3 points to the favor of the team that has home field advantage. If we believe home field advantage is worth 3 points, then the experts, the betting experts at least, feel that the Titans, the Colts, the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Browns are all considered superior to the Houston Texans right now.
Yeah, and on a level playing field. Which is important, Sean. And you know why? Because they might actually be playing on a neutral field at some point.
Yeah, that's a good point.
If you're not playing in front of fans, this will be really interesting this year. Let's say hypothetically there are no crowds the entire NFL season. It'll kind of be an experiment to see how much of home field advantage is based strictly on crowd noise. Because the home team has an advantage because they get to sleep in their own beds. They don't have to travel, do all those things. But probably the biggest thing in football is that it's really hard for the offense, the visiting offense, to operate because of the crowd noise. So if we played on neutral fields, how will it affect these lines and how will Vegas adjust? That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, because I do think the generic worth of a home field is 3 points, but I think the savvy bookmakers and I think the savvy handicappers realize that not every home field advantage is created equal. Like, 3 is sort of a baseline, but places like Kansas City, Baltimore, Seattle, depending on weather, maybe a Green Bay, are actually more like 3.5 or 4 points in terms of worth. So
I'll tell you what, in terms of if these games are actually played at NRG Stadium, the Texans -1 versus the Colts. T.Y. Hilton is not the same as he used to be, and neither is Phillip Rivers. I think it was a good signing for him to go to the Indianapolis Colts. But let's remember the last time Frank Reich and Phillip Rivers were teamed up together. Frank Reich got fired because his offense wasn't good enough. So I'm not so convinced that the magical combo of Phillip Rivers and Frank Reich are going to be lethal. And especially with that, if there is a crowd there, I trust our crowd and cantankerous Bill O'Brien's ability to get under Phillip Rivers' skin.
There you go. The other big Texan story today is that Laremy Tunsil and the team have started talks on a contract. The Texans' initial offer was for $18.5 million, reportedly, which would make Laremy Tunsil the highest-paid tackle in football from an average-per-year standpoint. Now, we don't know what the guaranteed money is in that instance. We don't know the length of the contract. What we do know is that Laremy Tunsil wants more than $18.5 million a year. He's going to get it. He's got a ton of leverage because, in part, Bill O'Brien is operating in many ways as a novice general manager, which makes this last paragraph of Andrew Brandt's article. I like reading Andrew Brandt. He's a former agent. He's a former front office employee. So he's got a really unique perspective on stuff like contract negotiations when it comes to the NFL. And Seth, he's got a portion of his column this week allocated to Bill O'Brien. And the subtitle of that section of his column is Bill O'Brien is in over his head. The last paragraph, O'Brien is being taken advantage of by savvy NFL general managers who smell blood in the water. And in some ways, it's not his fault that he's underprepared for the role. It is a role that even if desired, O'Brien should not have. Unless your name is Bill Belichick, those roles should be handled by different people. And that is on Texans senior leadership, not O'Brien, to correct.
Right, which is, basically saying that, look, the ownership shouldn't have allowed Bill O'Brien to have all this power. And it really is, I think it's too tempting and easy to say, like, oh, O'Brien's stupid or this guy's a moron or that. It really is as simple as no matter how smart you are, it takes a certain extra level of discipline and almost an ability to compartmentalize that very few human beings have to handle the conflicting interests of being a general manager and a head coach. And that it's that the very basic one is that head coaches have a much shorter term perspective than general managers do. And general managers need to always keep the long term in mind. And what Andrew Brandt, who's a former, he's both worked on the agent side and the front office side with the Green Bay Packers. The part where he says that he's being taken advantage of by savvy NFL general managers who smell blood in the water, I think that's precisely it. When people say, well, that was the best offer they could get for Jadeveon Clowney, or well, that was the best offer they could get for DeAndre Hopkins especially, or well, that's what he had to spend to get Laremy Tunsil, you have to understand that all these actual general managers out there, they know that Bill O'Brien can be had. So they're not, it's probably a running joke amongst general managers. If you were the dumbass that would actually give Bill O'Brien too much in a trade, you probably get laughed out of the bar the next time all the GMs, like the actual GMs, get together. There's like 28 actual GMs out there together at the bar, and Bill O'Brien isn't allowed in. and Bill Belichick they just don't like. So it's and then another couple other guys are just too drunk to make it. So I mean, nobody's going to give a huge offer because they know, like Steve Keim did, that if you catch him at the right moment, you can get DeAndre Hopkins for just about nothing. And that's the danger. That's the dangerous part of right now.
The part I'd be more curious about what Andrew Brandt thinks, Seth, just because of where the Texans are on their at this juncture of the offseason. They're in the part of the offseason now. You got the draft coming up, totally separate thing. In terms of negotiating with another human being, they're more into the part now where they're going to be negotiating with agents than they are other general managers. Their biggest to-do items non-draft are Laremy Tunsil's deal, Deshaun Watson's deal, and Zach Cunningham's name seems to get mixed in by people who know things into this same sphere. Yeah. So I'll throw him in there. Tunsil and Watson are the two big ones, though. That's one that Brandt doesn't mention. He just mentions general managers. Agents are going to be doing the same thing, man. Anybody who has to make a deal with the Texans right now, whether it's a contract or a trade, they smell blood in the water.
Well, and I also wonder, too, you know, with Laremy Tunsil, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Laremy Tunsil doesn't smell blood in the water.
Right.
And unlike an agent, agents do always have to try to keep up some level of a good relationship with various general managers and coaches because they got to do business with them. You know, we might come to blows over this client, but I want to be sure that my other 20 clients don't suffer for it. Laremy Tunsil doesn't have to worry about that. If Laremy Tunsil decides to be a pain in the ass, he can just go ahead and be a pain in the ass because he's representing himself. And just like clients representing themselves in court, you never know what you're going to get. You might get brilliance or you might get a disaster. But it's a wild card at this point.
Yeah, until he's too big a pain in the ass and Bill O'Brien ships him off to Minnesota for a fifth-round pick.
Right. And, I'm trying to be optimistic about this. It seems relatively simple and straightforward. They should be able to get Tunsil and Deshaun Watson locked up.
Yes.
If they don't get Watson locked up this year, I'm not even going to be that worried about it because, like you said, Pat Mahomes might decide to stick out and just hold out for as much money as possible and not sign this year either.
Final segment of the show. We'll hand it over to John Lopez and Landry Locker. Hope you guys are having a great Tuesday. Stay safe out there. Stay positive. Get outside. Get outside because I'm looking at the forecast, Seth, just quick PSA for people. Sunny with a high of 78 today, 55 tonight. Sunny with a high of 76 tomorrow, 62 at night. Cloudy on Thursday and 78. And then according to my weather app, 7 straight days of rain. So get outside these next few days. Enjoy yourself, people. Get some sun.
As the coronavirus commissioner of Harris County, I'm going to say first that sunlight probably kills the coronavirus, and then I'll be proven wrong on that, and then I'll say that that the rain will probably drown the coronavirus, and then I'll be proven wrong on that. My whole platform is going to be one of promising that everything will be over in a week. Hey, the weather is going to be nice out, and because people have their windows open, it'll push the coronavirus out the windows and into the open air, and that'll clear it. Yeah.
So just to be clear, you have reclaimed your commissionership over the coronavirus. I just want to make sure I know what day it is here. You are or you are not the commissioner?
Now that I see my old friend, the MyPillow guy, is a coronavirus. Actually, he's, you know what? Honestly, I'm not going to joke about any, so the MyPillow guy, I used to advertise MyPillow.
Me too.
For full clarity.
Me too.
And the guy's really interesting. He gave, it was weird. He's doing, they are producing a whole ton of face masks, and he was at Trump's press conference yesterday. People are arguing about whether he should or shouldn't have said whatever. I don't care. It was kind of one of those weird moments where oh wait, the MyPillow guy is at this presidential press conference.
Yeah.
And then you find out he's producing 50,000 face masks. I don't know if that's per day or they have produced 50,000. Under Armour is now producing face masks as well. And all these people, all these different manufacturers are kind of retooling their factories to try to pump out the personal protective gear and everything. It's pretty cool.
Distilleries are producing hand sanitizer. Everybody's kind of adapting here, and baseball will adapt as well when eventually it starts up again. So Seth, what do you think? First of all, I guess, when do we think baseball is going to start up? Because my guess is it's going to start up dangerously close to what would normally be the All-Star break for baseball, which gets us into some of the things that have been proposed in The Athletic as to what baseball can do to get creative and experiment. And Seth, maybe the sport of the big three, baseball, football, and basketball, that might need to experiment a little bit, even if there were no coronavirus, in terms of making the game a little more entertaining.
Yeah, and Joe Maddon came out and said this, that, hey, like, if you're already going to have to throw out a bunch of tradition this year, if you play half a schedule or something, why not just go for it? Just let your freak flag fly and try a whole bunch of different stuff. So the Athletic had a few suggestions of their own, and then a few from some anonymous executives that were really interesting. I thought this one made a lot of sense, and I think it would be a great way to kind of just start everything off with a bang. If typically the All-Star game is played at the midway point of the season or you know, vaguely around then, why not just start off the season with the All-Star game? Because you're not going to be able to look half the time. There are a lot of guys over the set. You know, the All-Stars from the first half of the season wouldn't have been All-Stars in the second half of the season and vice versa. So just to have fans vote for their favorite players and base it on the second half of last year and just start off the season with the All-Star game, where you're going to have a weird spring training anyway. Why not start off with a game where guys don't have to play the entire game? I would say expand the All-Star roster to include just double as many guys. Do something you can to just have that, like a big marquee event right at the beginning of the season.
They, if you were alive for it, you remember that's what they did in 1981. I was a little 12 years old at the time, and that was when my baseball fandom was burgeoning. That was when I was baseball was my favorite sport when I was a young kid in an early teen years, and I remember just being devastated by the 1981 strike. That was the year they went with a split season, and I forget how long the work stoppage lasted, but that's how they welcomed back baseball, Seth. They had the All-Star game as the very first event after the strike, and it felt amazing. It was so cool to be reminded of all the stars in the game, and I think it would be one of the most watched All-Star games of recent years because of what it would represent. It would be a great chance to market for a sport that is marketing challenged when it comes to its stars. It would be a great opportunity to get some of the lesser known stars on a TV platform that would have a bleep ton of eyeballs.
Well, you know what? And even more so than after a strike shortened season, I think it would feel, for different reasons, I'm not making a direct comparison here, but some elements of it would feel a little bit like George W. Bush throwing out the first pitch after 9/11. Mm-hmm. Like it would feel like this iconic moment where you're recovering from a traumatic event, you know, and just kind of coming back to America's pastime to do something that feels a little bit more pure and a little bit more innocent and all that. I think it'd be a really, really cool moment. The hard part is that it would involve extra travel in a time where you're probably trying to limit travel as much as possible.
Yeah, maybe. I think the voting would be something that would give people something to follow while players are ramping up for the season too. I'm just thinking in terms of stuff to talk about, get the sport back on a platform where people are pumped up about it again. The All-Star game to welcome the sport back, I like a lot. Some of the other ones in here, 7-inning games on doubleheaders. We talked about that a little bit earlier. I get the idea behind it. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that all bets are off. And I know that what you're saying is that it feels like whether it's integrity of the game or just the tradition of the game or what have you, is it going to mess with the record books? I think the records are all screwed to hell anyway. If you only play 60 games this year or 80 games or whatever it might be, that you put an asterisk on the entire damn season. It's none of the players' fault, but you have to put an asterisk on the season. And that I would rather, if you're going to try to play as many games as possible, I would rather have as few guys called up from the minors as you have to. Like, I know you're going to have to expand the rosters, but I really don't want to mess with the development of some of these pitchers, especially where it could do some of those guys harm to bring them up too early. I don't need to see some of these prospects getting shelled when they're not ready to play, or just minor leaguers getting shelled and making the game. You shorten it to, you know, you're doing extra inning games, so you have lesser pitchers playing and they're just getting trucked, and you end up playing even more innings on top of it.
Boy, that's an interesting wrinkle. I had not thought about that. If you expand the rosters to, say, 30 players, right now it's 26, and teams decide, okay, we're going to add three extra pitchers. Of those four guys, we're going to add three extra pitchers. what type of pitchers would those three extra guys be? Would, you know, if it's the Astros organization, is Forrest Whitley one of those three extra guys? Or is it more like you're going to have three veteran ham and egger type, you know, CNL Perez types that are up and down all year long? My guess it's going to be the latter, because I think with the really good prospects, I think that teams are going to still be as cautious with them as they would have normally been under a no coronavirus environment.
Yeah. So it ends up being lesser players, which could end up actually extending game times, because your position players, you're not going to be as concerned about as your pitchers, for obviously. So there's almost no way to plan the perfect scenario, because it's such an imperfect situation.
I think it's great for a team like the Astros that has such a deep lineup of hitters, man. I think this new environment where theoretically teams are going to, the pitching staffs, not the rotations, but the staffs overall are going to have potentially three or four extra bad pitchers on the back end of it, throwing in game twos of double headers and things. Like, the better a hitting team you are, I think the better this environment is for you, where they're trying to jam all these games in here. The other things added in this article, a tiebreaker. In the minors, they place a runner on second at the start of every extra inning. I guess, is that just to make sure, Seth, that we don't have a bunch of 11 and 12 inning games, to try to make sure, like a load management concept?
Yeah, I think they're just trying to minimize wear and tear as much as possible. Like, so yeah, you put the guy on second at the start of every extra inning. I'd almost just make it even, almost turn it into like NFL format, where it's sudden death as long as both guys, like if you score one run, I don't know. I guess you couldn't do that, because the other team has to have a chance to respond. Because then the visiting team actually has a put a base runner on second. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, or just go full soccer and just do home run derby. Just stay five guys each get a swing and play home run derby.
You know what you do? You put your fastest guys out at first, and it becomes a pickoff challenge. So where you just you have them take increasingly large leads. So you got Miles Straw, and he has to lead off like a normal amount. Then the other guy does. Then you have to move out another foot, and then the other guy does. And whoever can't make it back to first in time first gets eliminated.
I like it. Expand the playoffs. One exec says that if you play fewer than 120 games, you're not really determining the best teams anyway. I'd hate to see a playoff format where potentially the teams that we know are good, and maybe I'm saying this because we are in a city where we know our team is good. I would hate to see a format where, as much as I hate the Yankees or the Red Sox or any of the other good teams, the Dodgers, not name the Astros. I do think if it's something that all of a sudden allows some, you know, average or below average team to knock off one of the big dogs in the opening round of the playoffs, I'm not here for that. Like, I want to see when the end of the playoffs, when the ALCS and World Series roll around, I want the good teams to be there.
The most extreme version of this, and this is really intriguing, the most extreme version of this was this guy said that you could play a series of tournaments instead of having a regular season at all. So you'd start off with all six divisions playing a 2-week round robin World Baseball Classic style tournament.
Ooh.
Then you would play league tournaments, which would involve all 15 teams. Then you would finish up with a 30-team championship. So this is basically just a series of tournaments. And then that 30-team championship in October and November, they call it October and November Madness in this Athletic article, that would crown a champion, but it wouldn't be a World Series champion. So basically 2020 would be a year in which there was no World Series champion. That feels too extreme. I feel like you got to have a World Series championship, no matter, like, come hell or high water. Even if you can only play a 10-game regular season somehow, you've got to have a World Series champion.
I'm going to tell you why there's going to be a World Series championship, Seth, is because Rob Manfred called the trophy a piece of metal when he was trying to defend his adjudication of the sign stealing scandal. Like, why are people getting worked up about this piece of metal? And he immediately backtracked on it, apologized for it, realized that he had completely minimized the symbol of ultimate success in the sport. There is not going to be a, if there's a postseason, it's not going to be a postseason where they're declaring some offshoot outlier championship for 2020, and then they're back to the World Series in 2021. There will be a team declared World Series champion this year, and I feel like that's part of it. If he were to do that, he would catch all kinds of heat again over something he said a few months ago.
Unless he would try to, he would have to try to sell it like, well, no, because it does mean something and you can't just give it out to somebody that wins a 30-team championship or a 30-team tournament. What do you like, if it were like that, if it came down to crunch time and there were only 2 months to get everything done, would you rather see a series of tournaments or would you rather see some kind of like a modified regular season?
I think you reach a point where a modified regular season doesn't mean anything. You know, I mean, if you 2 months is what you threw out there, that's just... To me, if it's a regular season of anything less than 50 games, then you may as well go with this and then just declare the winner of the 30-team championship the World Series champion. That's all.
Well, you know what's going to suck for some teams is, you know, like when the Astros get off to a slow start and people get all freaked out because they have a bad first couple weeks. You know, if you've watched baseball long enough, that everything balances out and evens out. If you have an extremely shortened regular season – you might never come back from that bad first 2 weeks. You know,
right.
It's like you don't have much time to make up for it. And the pendulum might not swing the other way.
Yeah. Even the good teams have 40 game stretches where they go, you know, 15 and 25, you know, or whatever. Yeah. Maybe not that bad, but every team hit the thing about baseball, Seth, is the great teams win like 63% of their games. You know what I mean? Like a great in the NFL, a 10-6 team is viewed as kind of a slightly above average team. In Major League Baseball, if a team is 160, which is basically just 10-6 multiplied by 10, they're viewed as a juggernaut in baseball. You know, it's a much more random sport.
I wish I could have taken last season and put it onto this season, because if we were to play last season in this calendar year, the Nationals wouldn't even make the playoffs. So there you go. Astros World Series champions likely.
I like that. I like that's a good way of stealing a championship. All right. We're done. We are about out of time. Oh, by the way, Clint Sterner, for those of you who are wondering about buttering Pop-Tarts, Clint is awake and reminded me. I asked him, Seth, do you butter the Pop-Tarts toasted or untoasted? And he said, and I know you hate untoasted, so... But he says, toast them and spray immediately out of the toaster with spray butter, 3 or 4 sprays. So there
Wait,
you go.
Wait, is he doing, oh, spray butter?
Yeah.
Oh, spray butter, that's not even real butter. Like, that doesn't even count with spray butter.
It's real to him. Yeah.
Gosh, that sounds disgusting now. I was on his side, but I didn't know it was spray butter. Like, okay. No, you gotta slather that on. You gotta put a couple of patties on there. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we'll have to talk about this later.
I'll let you take it up with Clint. Seth, I'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m., buddy.
All right, buddy.
All right, sounds good. We will see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Stay tuned to Sports Radio 610 throughout the day on the radio.com app, streaming us on the website, sportsradio610.com, or tell Alexa what to do. Boss around Alexa and say, hey, Alexa, listen, play Sports Radio 610. However you're listening, we appreciate you. Landry and Lopez in the loop up next. We will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early, everybody.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.